Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn. Coming up, Malawi's President Joyce Banda seeks to rejuvenate her bid for re-election by appointing a 36-year-old running mate. We hear what Malawians think.
This appointment of Mr. Sostin Gwengwe brings out that youthful interface to the domestic political scene.
And the EU is set to loosen targeted sanctions against Zimbabwe. There's also a €3 million grant for the Southern African country.
The aim is supporting small and medium enterprises in Zimbabwe to get the best possible advantage of the facilitation that the European Union has given to Zimbabwe in trade terms.
Those stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
In Malawi, President Joyce Banda is apparently trying to improve her chances of re-election by choosing a younger running mate, Sostin Gwengwe, over her vice president, Kumbo Kachale. Malawians will be voting in local, parliamentary and presidential elections on May the 20th as their country struggles with a crisis of confidence triggered by the Cashgate scandal, in which an estimated €100 million was stolen by scores of public officials. George Mahango reports.
Your Excellency, I've also accepted this position of being your presidential running mate in these coming general elections because I truly share the values that you hold as an individual, as a leader, and also as our president.
President Joyce Banda speaks of 36-year-old Sostin Gwengwe as her running mate has been well received by many young people. Many young Malawians have praised President Banda for encouraging young people to take top leadership positions, which has always been taken by veterans.
This appointment of Mr. Sostin Gwengwe, as well as that of Mr. Saulos Chilima, and the availability of Atupele Muluzi on the presidential list, that's a running mate, and as well as the presidential candidate of Atupele, brings out that youthful interface to the domestic political scene, a thing which I think has been lacking for a great deal of time in this country. So it is a positive development, and we just hope that these young people who are appearing there are not just going to be used as pawns in the game.
Joyce Banda just want to use Mr. Gwengwe. I'm saying this just because we saw Atupele Muluzi coming with the youthful agenda, agenda for change. Then the opposition guys, the DPP guys, they came up with the South Shield as well. I'm thinking Joyce Banda has picked Mr. Gwengwe just because of that issue as well, so that he should be among the youths as well.
Born on May 20, 1977, Gwengwe, who has been serving as the Minister of Industry and Trade since December 2012, is a chartered and qualified management accountant. Gwengwe was unveiled at a news conference at Sanjika Palace in Blantyre on Thursday on the absence of Vice President Kachali, which signaled sour relations between President Joyce Banda and her deputy. Kachali has since not declared his next move. President Banda says she did not pick Vice President Kachali as her running mate because his contract was over.
And in 2012, it was not my term. I had 2 years to go. And I called on Right Honorable Kumbo Kachali and asked if he could work with me to complete President Bingwa Mutharika's term. And I was very clear that I was talking about the 2 years. Now I'm going to seek my own mandate.
President Banda's deputy, Kumbo Kachali, was not amused of Gwengwe's nomination. Reports say he was disillusioned with President Banda for not considering him as running mate. President Joyce Banda appointed Kumbo Kachali as vice president soon after she took office on April 7, 2012. This was in line with constitutional order after President Bingwa Mutharika died of cardiac arrest. The two were sacked from Mutharika's governing Democratic Progressive Party, DPP, for allegedly forming parallel structures. Thereafter, Kachali and Banda founded the People's Party, PP.
George Mahango, and it looks as if a lot could happen in the 3 months leading up to Election Day. I've been talking to Zane Sucker, lecturer and analyst at the University of Malawi, and I asked him for his take on why President Banda had decided not to choose the vice president as her running mate.
There are two reasons. The first one is that Sosten Gwengwe is coming from the central region. Malawi has got three regions: Northern region, Central region, and Southern region. By population, there are more people in Southern region, seconded by Central region, and a very few population in Northern region. First president is coming from the Northern region, and the demographics about the people that are going to vote, there are more people in the Central region and Southern region. Joyce Banda is coming from the Southern region, and the second person, Dr. Lazarus Chakwera, is coming from the Central region, who is one of the contenders. He's at least, he may be winning the presidency, but he's in competition with Joyce Banda. Picking Kumbo Kachale is a threat to her because the thinking is that the Northern region will not add the necessary votes that she needs. So she needs somebody from the center so that she divides the votes from the center. The second reason is that in the Southern region, there is Joyce Banda. UDF has Palance, Mruzi, and then Mutharika, the brother to the late president. These are going to divide the vote in the southern region.
Is this move likely to affect her chances of winning the election?
At the moment, I think it's a big gamble, because the assumption that she has is that Sosten Gwengwe is going to bring in votes from the center. But at the same time, she's losing votes from the north. Because people from the north, what they want is symbolic inclusion. And that symbolic inclusion is lost by leaving out Kumbo Kachale. At the moment, Sosten Gwengwe is not in a position to command a lot of votes from the central region. So it's a very big gamble.
So what are her chances of winning the election, given the Cashgate scandal in which the country is embroiled at the moment?
At the moment, the chances are slim. Are slim, especially because he has failed to handle the people within her party. Kumbo Kachale, it seems, is falling out. Then there was another minister who was important in bringing votes from the southern region. He also resigned. So at the moment, the chances of her retaining the presidency are very slim.
Who then is the most promising candidate?
The promising candidate is Dr. Lazarus Chakwera. Dr. Lazarus Chakwera has the vice president coming from the northern region. I picked Richard Msoya from the northern region. So the northern bloc is likely going to vote for MCP because there is that symbolic inclusion. That is the person who is likely going to win the election.
Saint Sucker from the University of Malawi.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
On Monday, the European Union is set to announce a further loosening in its targeted sanctions against Zimbabwe. The only Zimbabwean officials who will be denied entry to the EU will then be President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace. The sanctions were imposed in response to human rights abuses back in 2002. Meanwhile, the EU has promised Zimbabwe a grant of €3 million to help boost exports. Columbus Mavhunga reports from Harare.
In an interview with Deutsche Welle, EU ambassador to Zimbabwe, Aldo Della Riccia, said the €3 million grant would support the implementation of the Interim Economic Partnership Agreement between Brussels and the Eastern and Southern Africa and Indian Ocean region, so far ratified by Zimbabwe, Madagascar, Mauritius, and Seychelles.
The aim is supporting small and medium enterprises in Zimbabwe to get the best possible advantage of the facilitation that the European Union has given to Zimbabwe in trade terms, which is the Economic Partnership Agreement, that allows to export all the products of Zimbabwe to the whole European market free of duty and free of quotas.
Products of Zimbabwe can now enter the whole of the European market free of duty, but head of the country cannot. Mugabe and his senior ZANU-PF party officials are still on travel sanctions imposed by the 28-nation trading bloc following reports of election rigging and human rights abuses in 2002. Stephen Chidawanyika is the director of information in Mugabe's ZANU-PF party. He says the targeted sanctions have stayed longer than they should.
Sanctions have hit Zimbabweans very hard. And the most affected by sanctions are the widows, the orphans, the elderly. I'm talking about old people, both males and females, and the marginalized in society. If you go to them and ask them, they'll tell you we are suffering. And they're not suffering because things are not being provided for them by the state. It's because the state is failing to provide for their upbringing for their welfare.
That report was compiled by Columbus Mavhunga.
Human rights.
This year, 2014, marks the 20th anniversary of the Rwandan genocide, in which, according to Western sources, an estimated 800,000 Tutsis and moderate Hutus were killed. This in itself was a most grievous assault on human rights. But there were other consequences as well. The genocide turned thousands of children into orphans. In this report by Flora Kaitesi, we meet a South African who made it her life's mission to ensure that those children are granted the human right to an education.
An hour and a half drive from Kigali to Rwamagana district in the eastern province situates Agahozo Shalom village. This small town has been modeled as a home and an education institution and offers formal and informal education to about 500 children, most of them orphans whose parents were hacked to death in the 1994 genocide. Mark Hajenimana and Marie Eme Umutoni are both in their third grades in the youth village.
We have families here, which is why we learn better. The initial goal has been achieved, and I think what is remaining is using what we learn here to become better people.
We get knowledge that will also help other people. We want to continue working hard so that we can achieve our goals, so that even the founder of this school can be proud of us.
Anne Heyman, a South African lawyer trained in the United States, founded the school in 2006, along with her husband, Seth Merrin. But Heyman passed away recently after a horse riding accident. This school is widely known across the country, and Heyman's death brought back attention in a country that recognizes the school as an institution that has given orphaned children the right to decent education. Her motivation sprang from a similar village in Israel where orphaned children from the Holocaust were taken care of, hence the name Agahozo Shalom. The school's director, Jean-Claude Nkurichimfura, speaking at a memorial service held for Heyman, said Anne Heyman is gone, but her dreams live on.
Today we are starting a new path in life. We will strive to do everything that she would have wanted for us to be. But particularly the children, she always dreamed for them to have a better world. As you've seen these beautiful houses, these beautiful homes, she always said, don't let it go to waste. Take it, cherish it, and work hard so that you can have something that is this good or even better.
Rwanda has been striving ever since the genocide to give children and young adults access to better education. The government has introduced a free education program up to grade 9 and has doubled the number of classroom buildings across the country. The Ministry of Education has also enrolled more than 2 million children in primary schools since 2009. However, despite the influx, questions remain around quality and in particular the quality of teaching and learning process. Grace Mbabazi is an educationist with a privately funded education trust.
I actually do believe that education is a right in itself, but it's a right that goes further than just having a child sit in class. We must really ensure that the child has access to quality education. And I think Agahozo Shalom has set a good example of this.
In Agahozu Shalom Youth Village, the school's administration has said it will ensure its pupils finish school and be prepared with necessary skills to continue their education in tertiary institutions.
Flora Kaitese reporting. Now let's have a change of country and a change of mood. In the not-so-distant past, politicians and presidents had it easy. Sure, they had to keep an eye on their competitors, but rarely did they have to put up with anything as inconvenient as public criticism. And here's yet another thing the poor modern-day leader has to endure. Satire. Bram Posthumus went to Abidjan in Ivory Coast to witness presidents past and present being lampooned on radio.
At 6 p.m. every working day of the week, this is what you hear when you tune in to one of Abidjan's popular commercial radio stations. And that's exactly what millions of Abidjanais do as they endure the city's interminable traffic jams on their way home from work. Appropriately, the program is called After Work, and it's a runaway success.
After Work! Y'a pour tous les goûts!
Alors, je m'appelle Connie.
My name is Connie. I'm a presenter at Radio Nostalgie and one of the program directors. We had a free slot available and developed the idea to create something new.
Ah, voilà, créer quelque chose de nouveau.
And this something new was a live radio comedy show with an edge. Here is one of its creators, Jean-Jacques Varolt.
Vous savez, la fonction présidentielle en Afrique, c'est une fonction qui est sacrée.
You know, in Africa, the function of a president has always had an aura around it. It's almost untouchable. Now, here in Ivory Coast, we had years of problems caused by our presidents. So now that we have come out of civil war, we are saying to ourselves, you know what? Why not, just for once, play around with those presidents instead and make everybody laugh?
D'en faire des animateurs de radio pour faire rire tout le monde.
Il va te répondre, tu le connais pas ou?
Je le connais pas.
D'accord, ben, il va te répondre.
Imitating, yes, even lampooning past and present presidents live on radio. Never before has Francophone Africa heard anything like it. And it takes a special talent to make this a success.
Artistique. Et ce jour-là, non, nous allons avec ce président.
Alors, je suis pour les intimes Yao Patrick.
I'm Yao Patrick for family and friends. I am an entertainer for the social and culture services of the armed forces of Ivory Coast. I was also named best comedian of the country in 2012 and 2013, and I work for radio and television.
Animateur de radio et de télévision.
Known by his artist name of Chuken Pat, he just celebrated his 20th year as an all-round entertainer. How does he view his work with After Work?
As Chuken Pat, I offer some insight into our society by imitating its political leaders, not only here. I make caricatures of leaders elsewhere too.
Caricature les leaders politiques des autres pays.
Vous savez que nous avons un objectif.
If you did not know, you'd be thinking that this really is His Excellency President Alassane Ouattara of Ivory Coast. But this is his impersonator, Chuken Pat, live on air with his three colleagues who sometimes allow matters to run merrily out of control. But are there limits to what these comedians can do? Here's Chuken Pat one more time.
We use subtlety. We know more or less what we can do without causing shocks. We don't exaggerate because we still live in sensitive times, and with our message, we must contribute towards peace.
And what about the actual powers that be? No problems there, Jean-Jacques Varol?
Oh, je pense que pour l'instant, on n'a pas reçu.
So far, we have heard nothing. Just a little gossip saying that they listen to the show in the presidential palace and they love it.
Ils écoutent et tout ça.
And they'd better. After all, one of the owners of Radio Nostalgie is the First Lady. Most likely she will be laughing all the way to the bank as advertisers beat down that little studio door to get their slot in the most popular show in town.
Bram Posthumus reporting.
USA.
And time now to hear what you, the listener, have to say about the stories we've been covering over the past week. Shortly before we went on the air, Stephen and Puku joined me in the studio with some of your responses.
Hi, Mark. Our report about atrocities committed by Christian militia against Muslims in the Central African Republic generated a lot of responses. Remember, Amnesty International said this week that ethnic cleansing is an appropriate term to describe the attacks.
This is an emotive subject at the moment, so maybe we can hear what people have been saying.
Yes, Mark. We had asked whether the international community is doing enough to help resolve the conflict, and here are two comments that caught my eye. Lorraine Busotto from Florida said, "The international community is not doing anything. The US and the NATO are the bad guys. They are the only ones that actually do something in a crisis. The UN can't even save itself. There should be less people condemning and more people intervening." And Kwesa Allan is criticizing Amnesty International by saying, "I'm sure that report was written from a hotel room in Kampala."
That is his opinion. Well, we've also received some interesting responses about the story we covered on the German Development Minister Gerd Müller, who this week disclosed to DW that Africa will remain a main focus of German development cooperation.
Yes, the minister said he would also like to get German businesses to take a stronger interest in the continent. We wanted to find out if people think it is a good idea. And here are some of the answers. Emmanuel John Namasa from Uganda said, "It wouldn't be wise because it increases the dependency which affects most of the economic, social and political values of African states. However, when you look at the resource base with the level and rate of development, Africa states need a helping hand." Manuela Makmura says, "They have been saying the same thing for the past 50 years. And nothing has happened until now." Lulian says, "Africa has a huge potential, but Germany is not the only one in the game. There are bigger players acting there." Fabius Lopez says, "It's Germany. They will make it anyway."
That's interesting. A reminder that these are comments and opinions from you, the listener, and our online readers. We at DW edit these comments and make sure they conform to our editorial standards before we air them. What else do you have on the listener's desk this week, Stephen?
My final pick are two letters from our regular listeners. Nasidi Ado from a rural part of Kebbi State in Nigeria, who says he has been listening to DW Radio for over 30 years. He likes DW because of the programs that focus on African affairs. The other one is from Lino De Silva from Sri Lanka, who is a librarian. He says he would like to have some DW materials for his library members.
Thank you, Stephen, and thank you to all who wrote in. Lionel, we'll pass your request on to our marketing department. And remember, if you would like to comment on anything we covered on Africa Link or on our website, dw.de/Africa, then you can text us on 491609575951 I'll repeat that once again, 491609575510 Send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. If you're a member of a Deutsche Welle club and would like to air your comments in person, then do drop us a line with your phone number and we'll call you back. A reminder of our main stories. In Malawi, President Joyce Banda chooses a 36-year-old Munning mate, Trade Minister Sosten Gwengwe. The European Union is set to loosen sanctions against Zimbabwe on Monday. We've also been sampling political satire on the airwaves in Ivory Coast. And there we come to the end of another eventful week here on Africa Link. Assumpta Latus will be here on Monday. Do join her if you can. I know she'll appreciate it. Have a pleasant weekend. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.